Welcome to the Four Fab Fatties. I am Alyssa.
I'm Maria.
I'm Allie.
And I'm Rebecca.
All right. Welcome to our official setup. Our first time in a professional studio. Welcome back with the Four Fab Fatties. We got a new look. We're super excited to be here.
I don't know where to look.
I know.
Do we look so professional right now?
Do we look professional?
We're really, really excited to be here. Especially this week, we have a definitely like serious topic this week to talk about. And we're going to dive into that. But just want to take a moment to be like, oh my God,
I'm like, our setup.
Can we just take a minute to freak out? I made it.
No, wait.
Yeah.
We can't sing,
no,
right?
No, you can't sing that. That's copyright.
Yeah.
But
I hate it.
I know. But this is really exciting. And yes. It's really nice to sit in a circle and see your beautiful faces. It feels more of like...
You look real pretty today.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you.
It feels more just like...
It was very little effort. Took me no time at all.
That's a lie. Just for everyone, Allie takes a... stupid amount of time on her mascara. I mean, it's a little too much. It's a little too much.
You know, your lashes look great.
Yeah, they do.
They just also look great after 5 minutes, not necessarily after
today.
20 minutes
today. It was like seven minutes.
Today you did a seven.
You're right. But by seven, you mean like 12. But yeah, sure. It was shorter today.
I do want to acknowledge that we are missing our animal support member, Lucky.
Yeah.
So, you
our
know,
emotional support dog.
You might not hear the little clicky clip clips of his toenails in the back.
I miss the gizzard.
But he's here in spirit, you know? And you're still going to see him because we do the taste buds and we do a lot of vlogging with that. So Lucky will still be present.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
All right.
I'm really excited about our taste buds this week. Even though this episode is going to come out next week, I'm very excited about our taste buds this week.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, to get started, this week we're going to be talking about eating disorders and disordered eating, especially because this week, when this episode comes out, is Eating Disorder Awareness Week. So we kind of want to do our part to educate and learn and just kind of talk about our relationships with food growing up and what recovery looks like. So definitely want to start the episode with a trigger warning. We're going to follow what I consider to be group rules, meaning... whenever you go into a support group, you never know someone's diagnosis. So when we talk about things, they're going to be very specific. We're going to not talk about numbers. We're going to keep a safe space. Self-harm might come up. Eating disorders are definitely going to come up today. So there will be some heavy topics. But I can assure you that we are going to do our absolute best to speak to it in a factual manner and speak to it in a really raw and authentic way. So it's a difficult topic, but we hope you stay and have the conversation with us.
Yeah.
So let's get in.
With that said, I think we volley it to you.
Yeah.
Right. If you have been listening, I'm like, if you have been listening, or if you're just joining us, so Alyssa, I know that we talked about this in several previous episodes, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, we've all had our own, you know, journeys with dieting and disordered eating and doing terrible things to our bodies for the sake of taking up less space, right? But you are our resident, for lack of a better word, our resident expert, or at least our most recent.
Yeah.
And I would love it if, just to kind of kick us off here, if you could tell us a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, going a little bit into your story.
Yeah. So I think it's important to start with that I have an eating disorder. My specific diagnosis is atypical anorexia. What makes atypical anorexia different from anorexia nervosa, which is your movie anorexia.
Sure.
I think that's the way it's really portrayed in movies. Someone who's severely underweight. The only thing that makes atypical anorexia different from that is that I don't present underweight. Mm. That is the only thing.
Yeah, that's already offensive to me.
It is. It is. It is. is, and we are going to talk about today. I have never had the opportunity to talk about my eating disorder with fat people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And recovery and the eating disorder world is just so innately fat phobic. And it's definitely affected my recovery, and it's definitely affected the way I process things. But there's going to be a lot of things that come up today that are going to feel icky. Yeah. And when they do, I would love it if you say something, because I've just been surrounded by people who are like, well, yeah, like that's the diagnosis. That's what makes it different. And I'm like, so it makes it different because I'm not underweight. Now, of course, there's some people who have atypical anorexia who to me look like they're in normal bodies. Right.
Sure. There's air quotes there.
Yeah, there is. FYI. There is air quotes for our listeners. The more socially acceptable body that will also fall into the atypical category.
OK.
Right.
Yeah.
So the only thing that makes atypical different is that you're not in the severe underweight category, which is not a lot of people.
Yeah, I hate that. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I just think it's interesting because I really thought that the definitions would be based off behaviors.
Right. Yeah. For the most part, they are.
So it almost seems like, and this is just me as someone who's never been in the eating disorder world, especially in terms of clinical, like, settings with it, right? It almost seems like a weird add-on they made once they realized that people of different bodies have the same behavior.
Yeah,
like they had to like
come up with another name.
They had to once again put us in a different group,
right?
You know,
right.
Yeah, yeah. And that came up a lot for me in treatment, especially you know when you're with people who have gone to extremes to not be fat, right? So like that theme comes up a lot. But to really get started, I have atypical anorexia. So anorexia in the sense that I restrict my food intake to the extreme and push my body as far as I can go without food. I did this for a really long time through recovery. My earliest memory of my body and noticing that my body was different was probably in elementary school around like third, fourth grade. And my first memory is actually in fifth grade of like kids making fun of me one day at school for like being fat or like not, you know, like not looking the certain way or whatever. And I definitely remember sitting at lunch that day and looking at my food. And I thought I was such a big brain move because I was like, I don't have to eat this. Like, no one's going to know. So I threw out my entire lunch because then my mom thought I ate it. Mm. Right? I went home with an empty lunchbox.
Yeah.
But really, I just tossed it during lunch when no one was, like, looking. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not that I had an eating disorder when I was in fifth grade, but definitely signs of disordered eating and disordered feelings around food.
Well, it sounds like you immediately at least linked how people perceive my body is a result of food.
Yeah.
Right. And so, because I was thinking, like, whenever I was young and I realized I was fat, it did not immediately connect to food. So that's interesting to hear that yours did.
How did it connect for you?
I think because I had been big always, like I was a big 2-year-old, a big 3-year-old, you know, it almost just made me feel, I didn't feel like it was from one of my behaviors or one of my things I did or anything I did. I just thought I was. And that, like, my whole family was big. So I just felt like it was a natural thing that I was bigger than everyone else. It wasn't until I was older that I thought, oh, people are assuming or thinking that it's from what I'm eating or lack of movement or something, you know? So,
yeah.
So when I was young, it was just definitely like, oh, it's me, but it's also my whole family. My whole family's just big. And yeah. So we are, you know, just different than others.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost, you know what? I'm just thinking this in my head. I'm talking out loud. I'm thinking this idea out. So I don't know if I want to own it fully. But almost the same way that, like, someone might be like, oh, I'm just ugly and it's nothing I can change or do about it. It was like, oh, I'm big and there's nothing I can change or do about it. I just am.
No, it was a fact for you.
Yeah, it was just a fact. It was
a fact
not,
of being.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That makes sense. I want to, you said something that I want to go back to and just ask it of you and then kind of ask it of everybody. You made a distinction between, you know, you said, I don't think I had an eating disorder in fifth grade, but I was practicing disordered eating.
Yes. Yeah.
That was something for me in the last year or two that I really started to understand that I practiced disordered eating. Mm-hmm. I had put my body through terrible things, through fad diets, through crash diets, through all kinds of things, right? And just thinking, you know, oh, I'm just dieting. It's whatever, you know, it's fine. Oh. But like, I'm eating 500 calories a day. Like, that's not okay, right? And so I guess I would love for you to kind of expand on that a little bit, just again, yeah, from your, from kind of your clinical.
Yeah.
And then I do want to ask it of you two as well, knowing both of you and your histories with dieting and all the things as well, too. Just kind of your distinction for yourself and where you guys kind of fell on that journey, too.
I think, at least my hope is that it's going to be really clear the more we get into this episode and really dive into eating disorders, the difference. But I think, I'm pretty sure that the medical diagnosis difference between the two comes down to how much it is affecting your life.
Okay.
Right? So there can be disordered eating and you're dieting and you're exercising and you're restricting, right? And that's disordered, right?
Yes.
Even though that is a hot take.
Popularized, yeah.
That's going to be a hot take for some of our listeners. I promise we'll get into it. But that is disordered versus going to the extent where I'm counting how many calories I'm taking in the day and then literally making myself exercise until I burn all of that off, regardless of the signals my body is sending me. That's an eating disorder.
Okay.
We passed the mainstream diet culture at that point.
Okay.
We are in the danger zone. So I think when we talk about it, when you look at things, I think it depends. It really goes to how dangerous, how in it were you? I mean, I was literally going hours without any food to the point where like, I'm going to fall out, right? Yeah. Like you're gonna pass out, but like, I'm still not gonna eat. I'm good. If I'm just chilling at home all day, I don't need food. I'm not doing anything.
Right.
So I'm not going to pass out. I don't need to eat anything. I can live with the hunger and stay where I'm comfortable all day long. And then, okay, maybe tomorrow when I get up for work, I'll have like an apple and a granola bar.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. Like it was a game.
Seeing what you could get away with.
How long you can go, how far you can push. And then you got the, you know, eating disorders are so secretive and so manipulative. So then it's like, okay, well, I got to eat dinner at my parents' house. Or like we're doing dinner together. So I'm not going to eat all day leading up to it because I'm going to have to eat in front of everyone.
Right.
Right? Yeah. It was integrated into every single aspect of my life.
Yeah.
Versus when I was five, you know, it was comments about food, and then I threw my lunch away, and then I went home and ate dinner.
Sure, sure.
You know, it wasn't in that red danger zone at that point. But like, yeah, disordered eating, I almost look at it like the gateway drug. Because it's such a slippery slope.
And it's an important distinction to make because as someone who never thought, like, well, you know, yeah, I put my body through a lot of shit, but I never had an eating disorder, right? Never had an eating disorder. But then looking through
so
it again.
So what can we name it then?
Right? Yeah. But, like, looking through it again, eating 500 calories a day or being terrified to be making, you know, making dinner and to lick a spoon as I'm, or to taste the sauce. Like, oh, my God, how do I track that lick? Like, I can't put
obsessive.
That. I can't put a lick in my fitness pal, right? And so I do think it's an important distinction because I do think there are people that don't, because I'm one of them, that didn't realize that I was practicing disordered eating.
Well, like, yeah, and that's the thing I think that's interesting. We've been talking about, Alyssa, because you so publicly shared your story with eating disorders so far, that is not to say Alyssa's the only one in this group that's had, you
exactly.
know, an eating disorder
why,
or disordered eating,
yeah.
right? And I think that's interesting because I really don't know if I know a single person who hasn't had some kind of experience of
disordered eating,
oh,
right?
Yeah. It's everyone.
Yeah.
It is every single person who's ever been on a diet. I think that's what's so interesting about this episode is that there will be a lot of people being like, oh, like eating disorders really doesn't have anything to do with me. But it has something to do with everyone because this is so ingrained in our culture right now. Diet culture is the biggest monster I have ever seen.
Well, they'll give you, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, I think.
No, there's no word. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no words. It's so bad. It's so bad. The way we moralize food now, like, we are already in the real big danger zone for society with diet culture and eating disorders and disordered eating.
Yeah. One of the things I think that our listeners are going to struggle with is the idea of diets having some disordered aspects around it. And that's, I think whenever people hear that, they immediately go, okay, yeah, well, we're not talking about those LA diets where they only eat soup broth all day, you know what I mean? But the thing is, even diets that are positioned as, like, whole foods or, you know, nutritious things, they have elements that become disordered. They have, and especially practices that become disordered. And one of those things for me is, like, those hard right or wrong moves. You know, whenever, you know, I think one of the things like I see is a lot of like villainization of certain foods. And the one that gets most villainized right now is like carbs and sugars, you know? And I fell into that too. And it's hard not to fall into it sometimes, especially if you have family that's diabetic or something. I grew up in a household where we didn't have breads. We didn't have even lots of fruits because my dad was diabetic and we had to keep things sugar free, low sugar. So I've always had those foods villainized for me. I don't even know what it looks like to, what's the word? I don't even know how I feel about the word like moderate amounts. You know, I don't know how I feel about that. But I definitely did keto. And when I did that, you know, there were certain foods that were good and certain foods that were bad. But what ends up happening is you know the amount that you're supposed to be eating to have ketosis, the sacred realm, right? And that if you get out of that, if you make any choice that pushes you out of that, and of course that means knowing every nutritional fact of every single thing you're putting in your mouth, then the ideal is like you're done for the day. You're no longer in ketosis. You no longer are in a state where that diet is the diet it's supposed to be. You're no longer getting the health benefits of it, right? And so the non-gray area of it really made it hard. And is where I started seeing myself being like, well, I'm following this diet that my doctor told me to do. But there were lots of ways in which I had to either trick myself or come up with reasonings or say, well, I failed today, or and like a lot of shame around all of that. I don't know what's really natural about eating that way. But it's such a popularized way of eating that people will say, but there's so many health benefits. But that means you have to track every little thing. And if your macros get to a certain extent, right, then what does that mean? You no longer get health benefits that day? The nutrition doesn't count? Like, what does that mean?
So I think that's the struggle that we have as fat people when it comes to diet culture and when it comes to just living in general, is that all these lines are so confusing. They're so set in stone, like drawn in the sand, but yet they're blurred. Mm-hmm. So it's like, where does that align? So you're fat, you can't have an eating disorder.
Yep.
But we need you to do this because you need to not be fat. So it's like there's no way to like actually set yourself up for success.
The
food rules.
There's so many food rules.
I mean, but even the food rules, they don't make sense. Like you can have eggs today, but don't eat the egg white. But now you can have that, but now don't eat the yolk. But no, eggs are bad. You'll get salmonella. Don't eat them at all.
Yeah, or hard boil only. And then actually, never mind.
Just kidding. We're joking about that. Like, drink your water, but oh, don't drink too much. You'll float away.
Yeah, no, and make sure you start your day with your lemon water before you have anything else because it will start your metabolism.
But don't add too much cinnamon because there's calories in cinnamon and we don't know how to count those.
Oh my God, I'm literally getting like worked up as you're saying it because in recovery, refer to that as like the food police.
Yeah.
Right? Like the food police is going to come and write you a ticket because you're doing the wrong thing with food.
Yes, but none of us know what to do and every single body is different. And there's so many rules, and then you wonder why we fuck up.
But they act like those rules apply to everyone.
Exactly, and they don't.
Instead of acknowledging, right, that even you and I, who are very similar in size and whatever, right, our bodies respond differently to different things, right? Our bodies respond differently. Right. Our bodies respond differently. But exactly like you're saying, they want to just blanket it out. Just everybody do this. Everybody... An apple a day keeps the doctor away. Does it?
Not only that, but if you have diabetes, should you eat that apple?
Oh, the natural sugars?
Drop.
Did you guys? I literally posted something on Instagram like a week ago now that was like, good morning to everyone except the people who are still worried about the sugars in their fruit or something like that. And I was like, this is so relatable because like eat your fruit, but like not too much. Like eat your fruit, but like also not after 3 p.m.
Right.
And like make sure you eat dinner.
Eat melon, not berries because they're high in sugar.
Yeah. And make sure you eat dinner, but not past 7 p.m.
Because they actually strawberries have less sugar, so this is where even that doesn't even make sense. Right?
We're spiraling.
And that's our point.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, but that was a point that you brought up in, I think it was like 2 or 3 episodes ago about like the food pyramid, right? Even from a young age, right?
Right. How many carbs were on that pyramid? Yeah. How many carbs? I'm pretty sure I counted 12 loaves of bread, if not more. And I ate them. And they were delicious.
They
were
and you know delicious. What?
Now you're mad at
delicious.
Me.
No, because carbs are so great for our
not,
brain.
Not you mad at me.
I know, but I'm just saying. Society's wrong, though, because when you eat carbs are really great for your brain, because I can tell you what my brain was like without carbs in my life, and it was a lot of brain fog.
I
was
and real I agree, bitchy. But I think there's a lot of people on the internet who would tell you that my ass is 90% bread.
It's brought to you by bread.
And I don't know if that they're wrong, but... But it is what it
is. I love you so much. This Sandra is normalizing food, too. No, and this is, I think this is, for me, I want to, you know, respond to that in the sense that I'm coming from a world, like, who would literally never make that joke. Like, right. Eating disorder treatment, and no one's making a joke that their ass is mainly made out of bread.
And why you know? Shouldn't they?
I know, but it's the culture of, food is bad.
Yeah.
Food is bad.
Food is fuel.
Food is fuel.
And that's it.
I have said this often throughout recovery, and I share it today because I think it gives a little bit of like the mindset, but it by no means is to belittle someone else's journey or say that there are other forms of recovery that are easier, because there isn't. Recovery is a bitch for everyone.
Right.
But I've often said that I wish I was an alcoholic, because alcoholics need to avoid alcohol.
Right.
I have an eating disorder and I need to eat
food
multiple times a day. I'm sitting in front of the thing that I am so fearful of. I'm sitting in front of the thing that I don't want to do multiple times a day. Mm-hmm. And you do it today and then you got to do it again tomorrow. And you got to do it again the next day. And yeah, there's that, you know, it gets easier and you find your people and your support. But damn, it's every day. It doesn't, you know, it's every day.
And I mean, we see that. Like, it's the only form where you're not actively avoiding. Like, in all the other ones, like, don't do heroin. Like, you just don't
do heroin.
But yours is, you got to eat the food that you've been avoiding this whole time.
Yeah.
You got to eat it.
Yeah.
And what? No.
Yeah.
I don't wanna.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what to do.
Exactly.
Because you're just gonna be mad at me later after I do the thing you tell me to do.
Well, society for sure is gonna continue to tell me that I ate myself to my weight.
Absolutely.
And which, you know, we had our joking moment about the guy who did the response video.
Yeah.
But the second he started talking about how we ate, what do you mean honoring your hunger cues? How did you think you got fat? I said, oh, sir. Yeah. Oh, sir. I can't even listen to you now, because that's so... not my experience. Yeah. I literally was medically unstable because I was not eating. Mm-hmm. I had to go to a resident treatment facility so they can watch me eat. my 3 meals and 2 snacks a day.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the problem is that guy doesn't care, you know?
No, I know.
The people who have that mentality of, oh, we just ate ourselves to look like this, right? They have that mentality where they also, in the exact same breath, will say, oh, you know, some people are just naturally skinny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fat people are a monolith to them, and their own logic doesn't logic.
Make it make sense.
The math ain't mathin'.
That was such a mic drop moment for me, like light bulb, mind blown, the day that I realized this feels wrong.
Right.
How come my whole life I have heard, well, you know, some people are just naturally skinny. Why has no one ever said to me, some people are just naturally fat? Some
because
people
you eat too much food and you don't exercise enough. And...
Yeah.
Because same Rebecca, I come from a large family. I come from big bones and big boobs.
And big bellies.
And big bellies.
And big thighs.
And big thighs
and big
calves,
butts.
Big butts.
No, and big bread butts. Okay?
Big bread butts.
That is the way we will be big referring to Maria's butt from
big
now on.
But,
big bread
bees.
Booty.
But I just, you know, like,
fresh
it
big,
was,
big bread
it was
booty.
So, it was so mind-blowing to me in that moment of like, wait, I've been lied to,
yeah.
You know?
Make it make sense.
So, make it make sense.
So, I using that, like the make it make sense, right? I know something that we can all really relate to, and I think our big listeners can relate to as well, is I did not look for my eating disorder. I didn't.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. I didn't look in the mirror and say, wow, I hate my body so much that I'm going to stop eating food.
Okay.
That's not what happened for me. Yeah, I hated my body. Yeah, I thought it was my fault. Yes, I dieted. Yes, I exercised. But every single medical provider I saw, it was always eat less, exercise more.
Mm-hmm.
Every single year. So you know what I did? I ate less and I exercised more.
Mm-hmm.
Not once in my 29 years has a doctor ever asked me, what are you eating?
Mm-hmm. Because they just assume, because it fits their narrative, that you're naturally eating a lot.
Yeah.
So, because why would they ask you?
So all I did was stop eating. It got to the point, eat less, okay. Okay, I'll eat less.
You're like, challenge accepted.
Right. I'm like, okay. And then, of course, you start living in this place of hunger. Mm. And, like, the eating disorder thrives on that. My eating disorder loves when I'm hungry. Like, that empty feeling in your stomach where you're rumbling, it's so bad. Like, that's, you should have already ate food at that point. But, like, I am like, oh, yeah, like, give me more of that. Because if you're hungry, your body is burning the fat it already has.
Air quotes.
Air quotes. I'm learning. You know? So here we are. For the first time in my life, in recovery, I finally had a medical provider ask me, so what do you eat?
Mm-hmm.
What do you eat? And
but
I said,
here's the thing that really gets me out of all that. Like, you went through how many doctors and how many people questioned you about your weight, questioned you about your size, and how many people said, have you ever seen a dietitian?
Mm.
Not a doctor. Because we know doctors take how many nutrition classes?
One.
Yeah.
One.
Exactly. So what makes you an expert in this field?
Literally.
What gives you the right to tell me that what I'm doing is wrong without questioning it? And isn't the whole point of being a doctor to, like, dig in to get to a diagnosis and figure out, like, the root cause of something, not just make assumptions?
Yeah.
And yet here they are, 9 times out of 10, doing this on repeat to us, mm-hmm. and then wondering why we fail. Again, we're set up for failure.
How do you win?
You don't.
I just found out recently, I see an amazing doctor in the Charlotte area who I now have Allie seeing. I soon will have Rebecca there. And I know you're, I mean,
that
Maria,
is Maria.
I went backwards.
She's dyslexic. It's okay.
I'm dyslexic. I see an amazing doctor in the Charlotte area and I got Allie seeing her and you're coming next, Maria, and you're going to be soon after. And
yes, please.
And she's amazing. And she was the first person who actually told me that that things that were showing up in my blood work for years were signs of malnutrition.
No, wow.
And I said, oh, shit.
She was the first one that, you know, over the last year, I have had a very stressful year. Maria can tell you all about it, right? We've had some very similar years. And I lost a significant amount of weight in a very short time, unintentionally, right? And she was the first person who said, are you eating? Are you eating enough? I don't think you're eating enough.
Yeah.
Whereas every other doctor I went to, and I'm like, hey, I think something might be wrong.
Good job, sweetie. You're killing it. Congratulations.
Congratulations. I don't feel good and my hair is falling out. You're doing amazing, sweetie.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work, babe. And she's like, are you eating? And that was the first time that I had to really take stock.
Yeah.
And I actually just got upset a minute ago because some of the things that you were saying about feeling like the rumbles and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that I do that.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe we need to have a talk after this. Yeah. but yeah, she was the first one.
It's pretty crazy when somebody asks you that question. Like, so I started seeing a dietitian for issues. And the first thing she said to me was, why aren't you eating? And I was like, wait, what? Why is that a thing? Like, why would I, what do you want from me? What, Joe? And it was so different. It was so weird.
You keep looking at me. I'm really going to cry. I need you to look at Rebecca for a second.
I'm going to look at the camera. But yeah, when somebody actually asks you about like, what is your lived experience versus what is our made up interpretation or like whatever fits our own preconceived narrative.
Yeah, she sees you as an individual human. Oh no.
Like, yeah, I'll look at you because you don't have emotions.
Those things are the lock and key, baby. I'm ready.
Yes. But look at you as an actual human and take into consideration what you've actually experienced and what is happening in your life.
And it's such a rare experience that we're like, where are we?
Where? What is happening?
Like a fucking human
being. Then not only that, but so we go from that remarkable experience, right? Whoa, that was crazy. That was earth shattering. Like, what was that? And then to take this high and go to like family members or friends and you say, hey, I'm seeing a dietitian. And they're like, oh, great. You'll finally lose the weight.
Ugh. Yes. Ugh.
And it's such
rage tears.
It's such a blow to your spirit. And it just like takes you down all those notches that you finally felt. Because it's like, you are the people who are supposed to love me most. You are the people who are supposed to see me for me. And you're not getting it. And you're not understanding. And you can't even try and relate to my lived experience versus what you're still perceiving because of what society has told you all your life. Mm-hmm. Like, break the cycle. Somebody do it. Why is it us? Why is it us?
Yeah.
And it's so painful. And it's so frustrating. Are you good?
No,
well, I'm just saying. Well, it made me wonder. No, it just made me wonder, like, when you got that, did that shape your experience with your dietitian? Like, did that make you feel like you had to go in and talk to them differently? Or were you able to leave those opinions at the door?
I mean, it was hard. Because then it makes me question everything. If everyone else has told me this, and now you're the one person that's, like, trying to steer me elsewhere, I'm like, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. Not everyone else. You are wrong.
Yeah. I have a lot of things to say, but I will let you hold the floor a little bit longer. But I do want to say that I was known in higher level of treatment for being combative.
Right.
I had, which I feel like maybe if you know me in real life, you'll be like, yeah, Alyssa, I bet you were aggressive.
That checks out, yeah.
Like, I bet you were ready to throw hands. And like my therapist would be like, but why aren't you doing this? I'd be like, well, why do I have to do this? Like, you need to convince me.
Right.
Because you're the only person saying something different.
Right.
I am doing what every single doctor my entire life has told me to do. You're telling me something different.
Right.
So prove it. Let's go.
All those damn voices. It wasn't working out, right? Like,
right.
How did it serve me to listen to all those voices, right?
But they're so loud, and they're from the people who love us the most. They're from our family. They're from our friends. They're from our teachers. Mm. They're from strangers. They're from the internet. They're from magazines we see every day. They're from fucking media. They're like, where are our people who are just saying, you can be, and you're fine. You're great exactly as you are, just mm-hmm. because you are you, and you exist now, mm-hmm. and you're here, and you're now,
And you deserve individualized treatment.
Right, and
you deserve information.
That?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it sucks. It sucks so bad.
I grabbed Odell. I know.
Like a little baby.
Allie's crying. I gotta tell you.
Real, oh my God.
She never
the
lets
most,
me touch it.
The most raw and authentic thing that you said, which is why I wanted to do this episode so badly, was just feeling so unseen. I feel so unseen by diet culture and by the world that continues to push this narrative, you know? I've done horrible, horrible things to my body because I believed that it was my fault that I was fat, that I wasn't good enough because I was fat. I overcompensated in the craziest ways, right? Like, Of course, your parents only do what they know, right? With the information they had. Of course, I bet we were all on diets at very young ages. Mm-hmm. I know we've talked about it a little bit, but like middle school, I remember like seeing a dietitian who was only helping restrict my food and measure it out. And then you're learning like, oh, because I'm fat, I have to do this. Mm-hmm. My entire existence was around shrinking myself. Right.
And it wasn't even... I think at that point, it wasn't even like because I'm fat. It was because I'm different, because I don't look like them.
Yeah.
Because I don't look like everybody else. It wasn't, it never really felt like it was about my health.
It's not. And it's still not about your
health. It's still not.
It's never been about our health.
Thank you for that. Because that brings me to my point. The one point that I had is going to pull me out of crying, hopefully. Because actually, there were things that you said and things that you said that I was like, I need to say this. So I actually read this yesterday and it was like something that I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad this popped up. So there is something called I looked up how to say it, Semmelweis effect.
Yes.
And if I said that wrong, I'm very sorry.
It's Should we trust
the,
you?
The Semmelweis effect.
Okay.
So them's a fighting words, girl.
We needed a moment.
First things first.
You absolutely killed me.
I'm being bullied.
He's like, wait, can we trust you? That was great. Okay, love that.
Just hold on,
Cheddar. Okay, so the Semmelweis effect. So basically, what it is the human behavioral tendency to stick to pre-existing beliefs and to reject fresh ideas that contradict them, despite adequate evidence. Basically, where that comes into play here is that there is now adequate evidence that being fat does not automatically make you unhealthy. Does not automatically mean you're going to die at 40 years old.
Correct.
Does not automatically mean that you're going to get diabetes, you're going to get a heart attack, like all these
things.
It
also has nothing to do with the food you eat.
Yeah. Yeah, all these things that have been proven, that have been studied, that have been researched, and there's still so many doctors and just in the diet industry, in the medical industry, in so many spaces that refuse to do the work to say, okay, what I used to know is not right anymore. So let me learn something new. They're literally doing this. They're like, I'm good with what I learned.
Yep.
It's like, then why are you a doctor?
Right.
Why are you a doctor? What did you?
There's new medical advances every day.
Every day.
And those they'll take into consideration, but they won't go back and study this. But also, here's why. People don't want to feel like everything they've put themselves through wasn't worth it.
Oh.
And so for us to live differently, be differently.
Again, if I were holding this, I would drop it.
In our bodies as we are, it goes against that. Yeah. If you've hated yourself all your life for 50 years, I just got to lose that last 20 pounds and then I'll be okay. I just got to do this. I just got to change that. And then we're here living loudly and just existing happily. It's like, no, how dare you?
How dare you?
Yeah. And it's, I understand it. I mean, it's sad that they couldn't find a place to just be and it just exist and accept themselves as they are. And if there's small little changes you want to do because of your health or because of whatever, you can do those. We're not telling you not to, but we're just saying that you're perfect as you are too. And you don't have to change. You're a human.
And we see you.
Yeah.
We see you. There was a point that you made that jogged up something for me that you had said, and I know that we're going to talk about this on a different episode, but the overcompensating.
Oh, yeah.
The overcompensating.
Oh, I was definitely hinting at that.
100% is, I think, something that we all have felt, and I know that you specifically have written notes about. Like, can you speak to that a little bit? Like, in just... as it applies to this, and then
yeah, we'll I'm trying to think. Like, does it apply to this for me? You know, I think I overcompensate. Maybe, you know, when we originally talked about this idea, it was through the perspective of hiding.
Yeah.
And I don't know again that I connect these things with eating. I more so connect it with feelings of being worthy and feelings of adding to places.
Right.
So I'm not sure. I can't mentally get there. Sorry, no.
No. Nope, that's okay.
Can't get there.
That's okay.
Well, I think I can. So
please.
When it comes to overcompensating, I think the reasons why some of us went so hard and had such black and white thinking is because we had to do it. We had to do it perfectly because we are who we are. We look the way that we do. So if I'm eating the normal 2,000 calories a day, oh, don't do that. Don't do that because you're fat. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So we dove so far into the other side of it because we had to. Because that was the only way to change and to be like everyone else.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I think like where it shows up for me or where it did show up for me. And again, we will talk about that. We're going to do a whole episode about how we hid, you know. But I have been in this like perpetual state of burnout because I spent my whole life trying to overcompensate for my bad body, for being bad, because I truly thought that I was bad. I was bad.
This all comes back to that moment when you lick the spoon and you didn't know how many calories it counted for.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're bad.
Very bad. Very bad.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because, you know, whenever Maria and y'all were, like, all getting emotional, Maria's like, I'm going to look at you because you don't have emotions. And I was sitting here thinking, like, listening to y'all talk about people. And one, I don't know, it's both what I consider a superpower of mine and also a great weakness is I detach. And so, like, I was thinking, like, yes, I've gone into doctor's offices and had those moments. Of course, since having weight loss surgery, I just went and saw my sleep apnea doctor to get readjusted for a different pressure. And he hadn't seen me since before surgery. And he's talking to me about, like, I'm sitting there saying, like, I'm not sleeping well. I need this. I need that. And he's like, well, I haven't seen you in a year and a half. I see you've lost a lot of weight. Congratulations. Like, we had no human conversation, and yet he still made a comment about the weight loss.
Yep.
And I get that having had weight loss surgery, that then tells someone I wanted the weight loss, right? And so they feel the natural response to congratulate me. But we had no human connection, you know, and he said it to me, and all I did was feel numb. I don't feel things in response to people saying things about my body. And I don't feel it when they say positive things about my body. I don't feel it when they say negative things about my body, when they mischaracterize my body, when they say things about my eating. I'm aware, like, especially when we've been doing these food series, that since having had the surgery and people knowing about it, that I might have extra eyes on me, like, oh, you had that surgery and you're still eating a chili cheese dog, or, you know, you did this, why'd you do that, and then you're now having this. And the thing is, like, I'm aware of those comments because I see them said to other people mm-hmm. who have had weight loss surgery. So, like, I know them as like common criticisms. It's almost like, again, once people publicly know you've had it, then your food intake is up for discussion. And yet, even though I'm aware of it, I feel so numb towards it. And I think I just, there's something in my spirit that, like, absolutely rebels anyone having any say on who I am as a person. Like, unfortunately and fortunately, because in one way it saves me from feeling deep emotions. On the second hand, I just don't allow myself to be affected by people, positively or negatively. You know, like, I just, like, refuse to be affected by people. And that means I have walls up like nobody's business, you know, as a protective measure. And then I'll be like, I'll also at the same have a very deep seated need to be understood, and yet feel like no one can understand me.
I think we all feel that way, though. I think we can all relate to that one.
Yeah.
Like, I think as fat women in general, I think we often feel very misunderstood, or that no one gets us because they don't take the time to, or try to, because they have all these preconceived notions.
Yeah, I put very little trust in anyone, in any single person. And even if I feel like someone gets...
I'm very offended right now.
Listen. Listen. And the thing is, it's like, I've given you a lot of trust, right? And there's probably still an inkling where I maybe still don't feel fully understood by anybody. You know, this is just a chip on my shoulder I'm going to carry on until I maybe go to freaking
therapy. I will keep chipping at that chip until it's gone.
And I need that persistence.
You know what I will tell you, though?
I will tell you though,
Rebecca, that for someone who's able to, that says that, you know, you have no emotions or whatever, and you're closed off, for someone who's able to openly say that I'm very sensitive, because I am too.
What?
It takes a lot to be able to be self-aware of being sensitive and being able to openly say I'm a very sensitive person.
Yeah.
Because also, that also ties back into our whole lives of having to be, of having to have that, like, that armor up. Yeah. Right? Of having to, take a joke. Mm-hmm. I'm just joking. Mm-hmm. Why are fat girls so angry?
Right. I know it wasn't said directly to me, but it's still in a space that I'm in, that I occupy. Yeah. And so I'm just supposed to, like, take it. Or, hey, I've put this kind of trust in you, and yet you're still saying that. So does that mean you understand me actually? Do you get it or not? Or is this just something that we're playing to my face?
Yeah. Right? Like, do you actually care? I had a really good day with my mom. And then we got home and my mom showed me a picture of, she was like, oh my God, I found this picture while I was going through some boxes. And it was her and one of her cousins and, like, some friends, like, sitting around a table when she was a kid. And she was like, look at that outfit I have on. It's Danskin. She always put me in Danskin. And I was like, oh my God, she looked cute. She just looked like a little girl with her friends. Same breath. I look like two-ton Tessie. And I just, again, I literally, before we started this podcast, and this is not a slight against my mom, because I know my mom grew up in the same society that, you know, was telling her, you know, have the two cigarettes, a glass of wine, and go to bed, right? Like, the whatever. No, I think that was probably her mom's generation, but it's still just, like, I didn't really realize, because I used to say that, like, oh, my mom never really made me feel any type of way about my body, but I didn't realize.
It's subliminal. It's in everything.
Yeah, and until, again, it's one of the things that we've said this before, once you hear it, you can't not hear it.
Yeah.
And we were tuned into those words in a different way. We were accepting of them.
Yeah.
And now they grate against our belief system, so we hear it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I just wanted to be like, Mom, before you said that, all I saw was a happy little girl with her cousin and her friends. Mm-hmm.
And I wish you could see that.
And I wish you could see that.
Mm-hmm. That's so sad for her.
I wish society could see that.
Right.
Is just a happy little girl with her friends, is just a happy adult woman
with her friends,
living her life, not fucking bothering anybody just because her body looks different. Yeah. Unfucking believable.
Don't do it. I see you.
Stop it, Reba. Turn it on. Turn it on. Turn on the accent and everything will be fine. I'm giving you permission.
I think she's ready to talk.
I don't think our listeners are ready for that.
But one day you will get the pleasure.
You know, eating disorders are, they're first and foremost a mental health issue, right. You know? I actually have a crazy statistic that I brought with me from the Alliance for Eating Disorders, which is that eating disorders have the second highest mortality rate among all psychiatric illnesses, with someone dying every 52 minutes as a direct result from an eating disorder.
Every
52 minutes, which is why I say that this is a bigger issue than I think people are educated about. And
Liz, how long have we been recording?
You're at the 54
mark.
Someone died.
Wow.
Fuck, Allie.
Sorry.
I didn't know why you were asking that. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, eating disorders, we spend so much time talking about food, and eating disorders actually have very
they're trying not to cry.
I know, it's okay.
Look at Rebecca.
No, I keep going.
It's okay. With eating disorders, we talk a lot about food, and there's a lot of talk around normalizing food and getting rid of the food processing and everything, but they have such
look
little
look at me.
You almost broke her.
You have to.
She just talked about how she doesn't cry. She doesn't let people in. And you broke her.
That hurt.
Yeah.
That statistic hurt.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. Can you tell us more about what this week is?
No, yeah. I think it's okay. You know, when you said that, that's the people who died. It's not all the other stuff. I dated this guy a few years ago whose sister was in the deep throes of an eating disorder in college. Had a heart attack. Is no longer cognitively independent. Will be taking care of her whole life. And this is a young woman who had her whole life in front of her. Was doing her thing. And so, not only is it causing deaths, it's causing just a myriad of different outcomes. Big and small, to everybody. And it's upsetting, because one of the things we talked about is, like, no one gets untouched by this.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone gets to walk away from this episode saying, I haven't had some negative consequence from eating disorders.
Yeah.
From disordered eating. From diet culture. From how flippantly we fucking talk about it.
Right.
And I'm mad. And I'm sad.
Me too, girl. Yeah. Me too.
Not only that, but for it to be so linked to just, like, so many other things with mental health.
Yeah.
Like, how many people suffer from depression because they feel like they're unworthy of eating or they can't eat or like there's so many other things that link to it.
Anxiety and OCD are...
They just decide that because you're fat, you're sad.
Right.
Yeah, anxiety and OCD are very common with eating disorders. Eating disorders are one of the mental health illnesses where it's usually in conjunction with anxiety, with OCD. Sometimes you got the trifecta. You know, you got anxiety, OCD, depression, and the eating disorder. That's a
four-fecta.
That's a four-fecta. No,
not
it's just
four-fecta.
It's really deep. And what I wanted to say before is, you know, eating disorders, we spend so much time talking about the food, but in reality, they have so little to do with the food. Mm. The problem is that you have to be nourished to actually be a functioning human being.
Yeah.
But eating disorders are so much around anxiety and around body image and processing. And it is everything else. It's so little to actually do with the food. We just spend so much time either avoiding it or with it. You know, some people are binge eating disorder. It's the opposite. But
but at some point, you're still obsessing over it.
You're obsessing over food regardless.
It becomes a place you funnel all of all of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is one thing that stood out to me that you both kind of touched on that I never really thought about before, about how like every other thing, right, is like that you're trying to avoid. But at the same time, those other things, alcohol, drugs, they make you feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas where you're going through an eating disorder, food doesn't make you feel good.
No.
So you're then being forced through recovery.
Yeah.
To basically like take a drug that you don't want to take, right? Because it doesn't feel good. So it's so
complex.
Yeah.
It's so complex. it is. And honestly, you know, I know we're going to start wrapping up, but there's so much we didn't even talk about with like food rules and, you know, of scary foods and safe foods. And it's just so complex. But something I really do think is important to touch about in this episode is because like my friends have been making fun of me so much, not these friends, but like my non-fat friends, because I cry so much with them now. And it has been in recovery where like I was suppressing emotions for so long. Like I was numb. Part of the eating disorder was great because I was like, I'm not eating food. So if you call me fat, it doesn't hurt my feelings because like I'm not eating at the end of the day. So I'm good.
I'm in control.
I'm in control. Yeah. It's so much about control. It's so messed up. So I use that as like my armor for life, being like, yeah, doctor can tell me I'm unhealthy and everything, but like I'm not eating. So like I'm fine.
That's me, except for I just pretend I'm an alien among humans. And everything that they do is really weird because I'm an alien. Like, they just don't get me because I'm an alien.
Yeah, heard.
So it's very similar, but not through food. It's just through self-identity.
It applies to everyone else.
Yeah. When I first reached out for help with food, I was in therapy, and I had an amazing therapist. And she very kindly was like, hey, your relationship with food is not normal. And I said, what are you talking about? Of course it is. Diet culture. I'm just
dieting.
She's like, yeah, I think you should talk to someone about this. And I was like,
I'm talking to you, girl.
Right. So, and I'm the type of person, I was like, yeah, sure. So she gives me the information. I don't reach out. And she's like, keeps asking me. And I will be the person who will just do it to get you to shut up. Like, if I do what you're asking me to do, will you stop asking me about it? Because, like, just stop. I'll do it. When I first started reaching out for help with my eating disorder, I was describing myself as not eating for as long as I could and then eating a lot of food. And they went, binge eating disorder. They looked at me and went, binge eating disorder, right away.
Of course they did.
And I went,
it fit the narrative.
I went, okay. I don't really know much about binge eating disorder, but okay, I hear you. Okay, let me educate myself. And then I start reading about binge eating disorder, and I'm like, okay, I guess I see some of those behaviors, I guess. It wasn't until my first day in a partial hospitalization program where you go during the day, but you get to go sleep at home. So it's like only during the day program. And they put breakfast in front of me. And I look at what they consider a normal meal and I went, this is a meal? And they went, yeah. I went, I have to eat all of this?
What was it? I'm curious.
It was it's been a minute. One of the go-to breakfasts at PHP was, it was yogurt. I don't remember the serving sizes. Oh, okay. But it was yogurt. It was granola. One of my fats was chocolate chips. And then I needed a fruit, which I think was like an apple, bananas, like orange were usually like the go-tos. And then it was an additional fat. So like maybe like peanut butter to go with the banana or something like that. And I looked and I said, I need to complete this. And they said, yeah. And I went, oh, I think I need to redefine what I said was eating a lot of food. Because I was saying I didn't eat all day and then I ate a lot. Yeah, I ate a normal meal. I didn't eat all day and then I ate a normal sized meal and considered it binging, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is how disordered the eating was.
Yeah.
And no one thought to question you and dig no deeper. One
thought. I literally sat there and I went, oh, I need to talk to someone. Because they clocked it really quick when I was at program. They went, yeah, that's the wrong diagnosis, mm-hmm. You know?
And we're all walking around here with the wrong diagnosis, right. Probably in our medical charts right now.
Right.
100%, yeah. You know? So we started the episode and we were talking about, like, fat phobia, you know? I'm mm-hmm. like, yeah, it's so it's so intertwined,
yeah.
And ingrained in the eating disorder world. And I thought that was that is how I started my recovery journey. So yeah. Not a great.
Yeah. I really did have a question for you, and I don't know if we have time for it now. But I do wonder, you know, and this really is not just for you. It's for Maria who sought, you know, professional discussion around this, because I haven't. I've never talked to a professional about my eating, and I had weight loss surgery. So, you know.
That's wild.
Facts, yes. I did. Yeah. I guess I did see a dietitian twice, but it was much more like preparation for eating after, not what do you eat now.
Yeah.
And so I know you mentioned that you were like one of the only fat people. Yes. In residential, right? Yeah. And I'm just curious, like, what is it like being in treatment for eating as a fat person, either one of you, you know, in the office or with others who are also experiencing attempts or recovery work, you know, what is that like? Because I do think when people conjure the image of an eating disorder, it is what you said, the movie.
Yeah.
Underweight person.
Yes. Right?
So what is the reality of being a fat person with an eating disorder in recovery?
Oh, I don't think I've ever told you guys this story, and it's going to be a tough one.
Okay.
To listen to. Okay?
Maria,
I'm just going to...
Have your hand ready.
I'm going to just preface that.
I'm squeezing my
hand. This is a tough one. Often, I have such an amazing team of doctors I work with now who some of them will listen to the podcast and I'll low-key be like, are you proud of me? after. Mm. And I love them and I truly trust them with my life now, right? Like, yeah, I have changed my life because of these people and because of...
Gosh, trust them with your life.
No, literally.
I've never said that about a single medical professional I've seen. So mm-mm. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, 100%. Right. These people... Because, listen, I fought. I came in and I said, what are you talking about? The entire world says I'm fat and I'm bad and I need to change. What are you talking about? And then I'm surrounded by a bunch of people who I look at. I'm like, you're a fucking toothpick. The wind will blow you over. I'm sorry. You know, like, I'm not trying to then turn around and be like, oh, like skinny people. But like, I'm sitting here being like, no, I understand why you're here. You're small. But I'm not. So I was so angry and confused and frustrated. And I probably spent just months just challenging everyone. And they needed to go toe-to-toe with me. And the people I still see, they went the distance with me. They went toe-to-toe. And they came out victorious. And I ended up in residential treatment. You know? Mm-hmm. I say, I joke all the time. I've sat in enough, you know, sessions now to talk adequately about, you know, what my experience has been, but not enough to have a medical degree at this point.
Yeah.
So I talk a lot about in therapy, the need to be seen. And this came up before. I got very emotional when this came up before, because it's been the number one thing I talk about. When people talk about diet culture and when they talk about, well, you just need to exercise and eat healthy, I feel invisible. Mm-hmm. My entire existence feels shaken. I just feel like it's the most hurtful thing you can say in my vicinity. And I know that I own those feelings, right?
Yeah.
So in treatment, I made a lot of amazing friends who I could really connect with about the manipulation and the need for control and the shit about food and the food rules. And I could connect with them about all of it. But I still didn't feel seen because I didn't get myself there. There was always that big disconnect where I just felt like I didn't ask for this. I didn't look in the mirror and say, like, I'm going to start. Again, no one asks for an eating disorder, right? But I just felt like there were so many external reasons for why I felt like there were so many external reasons for how I ended up where I was. Mm-hmm. And I was very much in the phase like, why do I need to fix it now? Right? All these people did this to me. Why do I have to fix it? I was so angry, right? So when people are around me and they talk about like exercising and dieting, I just feel invisible. Mm-hmm. So I'm at residential. I just get moved from the isolation room. So when you first get there, they put you in isolation with whoever with whoever you showed up with that day. So I literally went in with like a girl who was in high school or whatever. And they put us in the separate room. And it's basically to teach you like what you can, here are the rules and here's how you get checked off. And you need to like, you have to get checked off before you eat so they can make sure you have everything on your plate that's supposed to be there. And then you need to eat everything. And then they need to come and check it off. Like check under the plate, check, like make sure you're not hiding anything, right? Like you get checked off. You can't wear baggy sweatshirts because you can't hide food. Like there are a lot of rules.
Yeah.
There are a lot of rules. So I just left the room where I was isolated and joined the bigger group. And they put my seat, was randomly like assigned to the middle of this table with two people on each side of me and a table behind me. And I just felt overwhelmed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of food. I cannot breathe. So I probably was successful for like two full days in that seat. And then breakfast came one day and I went, I'm not happening. And I literally just got up and walked out. It's not funny. Okay. Like it's not funny, but I did. I just got up and I walked out and they're like, Alyssa, Alyssa. And I'm just like, see you never. So I literally just kept walking. They're calling my name. I wouldn't turn around. So one of the counselors like runs and catch up to me. She's like, what's going on? I said, girl, I can't do it. There's too many people. There's not enough space. I feel like I don't fit in the chair. I feel like I'm taking up the food. I just was word vomiting. I honestly cannot even remember, but I do know I just word vomited 100 things of why I was feeling overwhelmed. And I remember she was like, okay, well, would you feel better if you sat in a different spot? And I said, I don't know. Maybe. What if we got a different chair? I said, I don't know. What if we did this? I don't know. I left that conversation with that woman being like, why are you asking me so many questions? I don't know. 24 hours later, I go back to the dining hall. And we're all walking in the morning together. And there is one gigantic chair with padding just sitting there.
I hate it.
No one talked to me. No one asked me. No one said anything. And it was just there. And this is how I created the piece, the world's largest chair. I created an art piece when I was in art therapy based around this literal event. And I went, wow. And that was the moment where I said, I will never be seen here. Like, I will get what I need here and I will do what I need to do. But like, they will never see me. You know, there's a lot of things in treatment that are not great for fat people. You're supposed to get weighed every morning, right? And it's really for people who are underweight to make sure that they're gaining and not losing. And there's a rule that if you lose weight, you have to drink extra supplements. But that doesn't apply to fat people.
But you still had to weigh every morning?
I still had to weigh every morning. I still was on blind weights. I didn't know my weight. I know it was fluctuating.
All right. New goal for the poor fat fatties is we are going to start recovery centers for strictly for atypical anorexia.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm very angry right now.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot of feelings. It's a lot of feelings. And it's one of the reasons why.
I'm good.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's one of the reasons why I was so happy to have the space to talk about it with you guys. Because it is who I am. Like, this is who I am. Like, all of these lived experiences have changed who I am.
Yeah.
Right? Like, diet culture and my eating disorder took away my love and joy for dance. I haven't performed in years. You know, it just like robs you of everything happy and joyful. So.
There was one thing that you stopped yourself from saying, like halfway through your sentence. And I'm not going to make you finish it, but I'm going to finish it for you.
Okay.
You started to say, I take up too much space.
Yeah.
And I think that that is such a universal thing for fat people, is that we spent the majority of our lives being told that we took up too much space and being fed the best thing that you can do for yourself is to take up less space.
Yeah.
Is to shrink yourself.
Yeah. And if you're going to take up space, make sure you package it in a way that's very consumable for others.
Yeah.
Be consumable. Be funny.
Yep.
Be
the fat funny friend. We love a fat sidekick.
Be gentle. You know, be a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
Be a good student. Be a good this. Be a good that. Be accommodating. Say yes to everybody. Be a people pleaser.
Yeah.
Because you got to compensate for the fact that you take up too much space.
Yeah.
One thing. Alyssa,
you don't.
Thank you.
You don't take up too much space. Take up more space.
Yeah. And one thing I do want to acknowledge that I admire about you is that even though you found yourself in these spaces that are not made for you, unlistening at times to you, you continue to advocate in those spaces anyways.
Yeah.
Like you're going to speak, you're going to help Renfrew, right?
Yeah.
With their week when they're doing awareness for eating disorders. Yeah. And even though it is uncomfortable, and even though you know it's not a perfectly made space that considers your needs, you show up because you believe it for yourself and you believe it for others.
Yeah. I'll say a positive way to end it. I reconnected with my therapist from Renfrew. Who's now at like a different place in outpatient. So I get to see her again, which is kind of fun. Like she saw me when I was like my most mentally ill. And now I'm like, yay.
I'm mentally ill and joyful sometimes.
So we get to see each other. And she said to me that she connected with someone else who was there, who I had a great relationship with when I was in program. And she said that she always felt like I was destined to go through this lived experience because, like, to make a difference and to educate. And while that is so fluffy and amazing, and I really hope it does happen, it just gave me a little sense of
wait a minute,
purpose.
What do you mean when it's happening?
It's happening.
Where are you?
Where are you
right
now?
You're doing it.
I'm trying to do it for sure.
You're doing it. You're not trying. It's happening. It's super now.
Yeah.
Before you wrap up that thought, I do want to just touch base on the second half of Rebecca's question, and then we can wrap up. Because I also never went to a dietitian, and so I am curious about your experience, your lived experience as, you know, going to a dietitian and what that was like, you know, being in a dietitian's office, like what.
Yeah, shit. Half the doctor's office I go to, the chairs are shitty.
Yeah, so mine was nearly as extensive. Mine was actually a dietitian, like virtually. So mine was very much how I did my therapy. That's how I found my dietitian, was talking to my therapist. And she was like, I was telling her how tired I was and like I wasn't really sleeping. And she was like, what have you eaten today? And I was like, what does that have to do with anything? We're not here to talk about that.
Literally.
And she was like, it matters. And then we got into it and she was like, oh, I think you should talk to a dietitian too. And I was like, so my brain's broken other ways too? Right. And still talk to you? Cool, cool, cool. Great. Yeah. So yeah, talk to a dietitian virtually. It was very challenging. It was still that very much back and forth tug and pull of like, what does this mean? Because this is not what I've been taught my whole life. And then being very excited about it and taking it back to my parents and being like, you know, like, look, I'm doing this and I'm things are like, it's great. Like I'm learning and I'm growing and I feel good. And then it's very much the, okay, you'll lose the weight then you'll be better. Mm-hmm. You'll finally do it. And it just felt so unseen.
So unseen.
And I felt like they weren't hearing what I was saying. It wasn't about, you know, oh, something might be different about you. Like, it still had to fit the preconceived notions. And so mine, as we got into, you know, treatment and all that and talking more, mine was very much on the disordered eating side of things. And I'm going to phrase it very specifically. I have restriction and binging. And it's a cycle. Mm-hmm. And it's not a binge and restrict cycle. It's a restrict and then binge cycle. And so it's not a matter of I'm eating so much because I'm fat and that's what you do. Mm-hmm. No, I'm literally not eating at all.
Until I cannot take it anymore.
Cannot take it. Then I'm like, okay, we're just going to have a little something. And then the floodgates are open. And then it just goes downhill. And then my black and white thinking kicks in. And I'm like, this is all or nothing. Fucking go for it. Mm-hmm. And then you do overeat.
Yep.
And maybe just like you, maybe my idea of overeating, air quotes, is different. Maybe it's not as...
Come over. I'll host you for what Renfrew considers a meal.
I've seen you eat.
Right. But you haven't seen all the times. Like there, I do know that part of it is like I'll get into a bag of chips and be like nom 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 and watch something and like very absentmindedly.
Yep.
Like that, I'm aware. Sure. Yeah. I think we all have.
Yeah.
And growing up, like I very much watched my father every night. He'd work all day.
Yeah.
After work, he'd go to the garage and work more, and then he'd come home late at night, and that's what he'd do.
Yeah. Eat everything.
He'd have the chips, he'd have the candy out, he'd be snacking on the couch, what are we watching?
Yeah.
And so it was very much a learned thing.
Yeah.
And I found myself in similar patterns. I saw Dad not eat all day, Dad would go for a walk at lunch instead.
Yeah.
And now here I am, not eating all day. I might not go for a walk because I don't want to. It was too sunny out there and I'm too pasty. But I didn't eat.
That, like, again... Where did I learn this behavior?
Yeah.
And then when I come to you and say, hey, I went to a dietitian and I'm learning things, I'm growing. Oh, great. You won't look like that anymore.
I very much don't think that he sees it that way. He didn't see what he was doing.
Well, and he's not confronted with it because his body doesn't make someone confront him with it.
He was somewhat confronted because he does have like a little belly, but he's very much an average size male.
Yeah.
By all standards.
Yeah.
Tall, just a little belly.
Yeah.
And like the doctor would say a little occasional things, and he would have it from, you know, outside forces too. But it wasn't the same. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
We're vastly different. And so for me to just be like, oh, I saw this somewhere. This was something. It was going to my grandmother's every, you know, morning because my parents had to go to work. And it was like, I didn't want to eat in the morning. And grandma insisted I eat something. So she'd give me cookies and cocoa. Like, so I thought that was breakfast. Mm-hmm. Like, how's that not breakfast? And it can be breakfast. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's taken me a long time to get to that point and realize that that's an okay breakfast if that's all you can manage that day.
Yes.
But it's also very much of a, I still don't want to eat it. I don't want to start.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what that means because I'm afraid every time it's going to be a binge.
Correct. Mm.
And so it's still very much black and white.
Yeah.
Good days and bad days.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild to me how you two have such completely different experiences, but you both felt so alone, whereas you were alone and almost isolated around loved ones and you were alone in an entire recovery center.
Yeah.
I think that's what, I mean, that's what mental health is.
Yeah.
All of it's feeling alone, feeling unseen, feeling unheard.
Yeah.
Feeling, that's what it does. Your brain tells you that you're alone and that no one will ever understand you, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do these things and you just try and make it better. And what can I do to make myself fit in?
Yeah. And I think that, and I think that is one of the universal things, universal experiences of living in a fat body is just feeling so unseen. Yeah. Feeling unseen and unheard.
Feeling too seen.
Yeah, it's one of the other.
While simultaneously feeling unseen.
Yeah. Because you are...
Exposed, but not in the safe way.
You're exposed, and you are... I do feel like we are the only... We're like the
community?
Last...
Community?
We're the last community that it is still okay to publicly mock us.
Still socially acceptable.
Socially acceptable that you can...
Well, yeah, Allie... It's in the name of health.
You can mock a fat girl.
Look how unhealthy we are. We're all going to die.
You can mock a fat girl on a Sunday and you can show up to your job on Monday and have no consequences.
Yeah.
And it feels so violating.
Yeah.
It feels so violating because, yeah.
Because we've come so far.
We're so seen. We're so visible. But at the same time, I'm not allowed to say, what the fuck is wrong with you?
But you.
Because then I'm just an angry fat girl.
You can't say so many other things.
Yeah.
Because you'll get canceled immediately.
Immediately.
But you tell.
Immediately.
But you say anything.
I'm terrified to say the wrong thing on my own fucking podcast.
Literally.
But meanwhile, fuck your feelings, man. Gets to just, you know, keep showing up on YouTube.
To kind of bring us full circle, I did want to share from Alliance for Eating Disorders. You know, I really started us off saying that, you know, eating disorders and diet culture affects everyone. Disordered eating affects everyone. And some of the statistics Alliance for Eating Disorders put out was 22% of children and adolescents have an unhealthy eating behaviors that could lead to or indicate an eating disorder. More than 29 million Americans will experience an eating disorder in their lifetime. It's a lot of people. Yeah. It's a lot of people. I hope that... you know, one of the things that people really take away from this episode is that anyone can experience an eating disorder. It doesn't have anything to do with what they look like. You can't tell what type of eating disorder they have by looking at them. And that it is way more than just about the food.
It's complex.
It is very complex. And if anything we spoke about today resonated with you on a really deep level, we do have some resources. We will make sure that those are in the chat, but I also just want to call out while we're going that I know I said the National Alliance for Eating Disorders. I love them. For Eating Disorder Awareness Week, they do a literal free entire series of support groups, and they have support groups for people in larger bodies.
Oh, love.
It's amazing. I truly went last year, and you have to have your camera on. It's one of their rules. You don't have to be muted, but I literally sat there the whole time just crying. I was doing art with my grandma. I had my little headphones in, and it was just so beautiful to see all of these people coming together. They have support groups for loved ones, people who are supporting someone going through an eating disorder. Project Heal is another great one. I will say the National Eating Disorder Association, even though I'm not the biggest fan of NEDA. And I will say, for anyone who doesn't feel like they have a doctor that they can really confide in and that is like truly with them on their health journey, that HAES, Health at Every Size, is the most important thing that you as a bigger individual can educate yourself on. And they have amazing, amazing resources on their website. There are doctors out there who believe in the current studies that are being done. And they also believe that diet culture doesn't work and they will see you and meet you where you are and truly help you achieve health at your size. So I really encourage everyone to do their own education after.
You could say in everybody.
Oh, I love that. That's a perfect way to wrap up our first time in a studio with a very deep, very emotional conversation, but I wouldn't wanted to have it with anyone else except you guys. So yeah. We're fat.
We're four.
We're fab.
We're friends.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.